the book? Is it a little hot in here, or?
Yeah, she needs to have some air on her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's quite hot. It's quite hot, but it's all right. That's all right. I mean, I'm all right.
Oh, that's right.
It's nice you have this skylight here. Okay, so we're going to read from the Rasa Dance, description of the Rasa Dance, introduction, actually. All right. Let's see, let me find the place where we left off. Okay, so we're reading in the middle of the Rasa Dance introduction. That's fine. So, Om Megana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this is right after Krishna just really tried to discourage the gopis and aggravate them. We got to this point, and now they're going to rebuke Krishna. The gopis were not ordinary women. In essence, they were on an equal level with Krishna. They are his eternal associates. As is confirmed in the Brahma Sangita, they're expansions of the pleasure potency of Krishna. And as his potency, they are non-different from him. Although they were depressed by the words of Krishna, they did not like to use harsh words against him. Yet they wanted to rebuke Krishna for his unkind words, and therefore they began to speak in faltering voices. They did not like to use harsh words against Krishna because he was their dearmost, their heart and soul. The gopis had only Krishna within their hearts. They were completely surrendered and dedicated souls. Naturally, when they heard such unkind words, they tried to reply. But in the attempt, torrents of tears fell down from their eyes, and finally, they managed to speak. Krishna, they said, you are very cruel. That's pretty harsh. You should not talk like that. We are full-fledged, surrendered souls. Please accept us, and don't talk in that cruel way. Of course, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you can do whatever you like, but it is not worthy of your position to treat us in such a cruel way. We have come to you, leaving everything behind, just to take shelter of your lotus feet. We know that you are completely independent and can do whatever you like, but we request you, don't reject us. We are your devotees. You should accept us as Lord Narayan accepts his devotees. There are many devotees of Lord Narayan who worship him for salvation, and he awards them salvation. Similarly, how can you reject us when we have no other shelter than your lotus feet? Our dear Krishna, they continued, you are the supreme instructor. There is no doubt about it. Your instructions to the women to be faithful to their husbands and to be merciful to their children, to take care of homely affairs, and to be obedient to the elderly members of the family are surely just according to the tenets of Shastra. But we know also that all these instructions of the Shastras may be observed perfectly by keeping oneself under the protection of your lotus feet. Our husbands, friends, family members, and children are all dear and pleasing to us only because of your presence. For you are the supersoul of all living entities. Without your presence, one is worthless. When you leave the body immediately dies, and according to the injunction of the Shastras, a dead body must immediately be thrown in a river or burned. Therefore, ultimately, you are the dearmost personality in this world. By placing our faith and love in your personality, there is no chance of our being bereft of husbands, friends, sons, or daughters. It's cool enough now, actually. You might give her a draft if you put that on.
Just leave it there and then...
Yeah, in case.
Alright.
If a woman accepts you as the supreme husband, then she will never be bereft of her husband, as in the bodily concept of life. If we accept you as the ultimate husband, then there is no question of being separated, divorced, or widowed. You are the eternal husband, eternal son, eternal friend, and eternal master, and one who enters into a relationship with you is eternally happy. Since you are the teacher of all religious principles, your lotus feet first have to be worshipped. According to the Shastras, Acharya Upasana, the worship of your lotus feet is the first principle. Besides that, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, you are the only enjoyer, you are the only proprietor, and you are the only friend. As such, it's interesting, you're only enjoyer, only proprietor, and only friend. As such, we have come to you leaving aside all so-called friends, society, and love, and now you have become our enjoyer. Let us be everlastingly enjoyed by you. Be our proprietor, for that is your natural claim, and be our supreme friend, for you are naturally so. Let us thus embrace you as the supreme beloved. Then the gopis told the lotus-eyed Krishna, please do not discourage our long-cherished desires to have you as our husband. Any intelligent man who comes or cares for his own self-interest reposes all of his loving spirit in you. Persons who are simply misled by the external energy, who want to be satisfied by false concepts, try to enjoy themselves apart from you, the so-called husband, friend, son, daughter, or father and mother, are all simply sources of material misery. It's pretty heavy. You're able to hear all right with the coughing there? No one is made happy in this material world by having a so-called father, mother, husband, son, lord, daughter, and friend. Although the father and mother are expected to protect the children, there are many children who are suffering for want of food and shelter. There are many good physicians, but when a patient dies, no physician can revive him. There are many means of protection, but when one is doomed, none of the protective measures can help, and without your protection, the so-called sources of protection simply become sources of continuous distress. We therefore appeal to you, dear Lord of all lords, please do not kill our long-cherished desires to have you as our supreme husband. Dear Krishna, as women, we are certainly satisfied when our hearts are engaged in the activities of family affairs. But our hearts have already been stolen by you. We can no longer engage them in family affairs. Besides that, you are asking us repeatedly to return home, and that is a very appropriate instruction. But unfortunately, we have been stunned here. Our legs have no power to move a step from your lotus feet. Therefore, if even at your request we return home, what shall we do there? We have lost all of our capacity to act without you. Instead of engaging our hearts in family affairs as women, we have now developed a different type of lust which is continually blazing in our hearts. Now we request you, dear Krishna, to extinguish that fire with your beautiful smile and transcendental vibration emanating from your lips. If you do not agree to do us this favor, we shall certainly be burned in the fire of separation. In that condition, we'll simply think of you and your beautiful features and give up our bodies immediately. In that way, we think it will be possible for us to reside at your lotus feet in the next life. Dear Krishna, if you say that if we go home, our respective husbands will satisfy the lusty flame of our desire, we can only say that it is no longer possible. You have given us a chance to be enjoyed by you in the forest and have touched our breasts once in the past, which we accepted as a blessing, as did the goddesses of fortune who were enjoyed in the Vaikuntha lokas by you. Since we have tasted this transcendental enjoyment, we are no longer interested in going to anyone but you for the satisfaction of our lust. Dear Krishna, the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune are always worshipped by the demigods, although she is always resting on your chest in the pictures, Vaikuntha planets. she underwent great austerity and penance to have some shelter at your lotus feet, which are always covered by tulsi leaves. Your lotus feet are the proper shelter of your servitors, and the goddess of fortune, instead of abiding on your chest, comes down and worships your lotus feet. We have now placed ourselves under the dust of your lotus feet. Please do not reject us, for we are fully surrendered souls. Dear Krishna, you are known as Hari. You can destroy all the miseries of all living entities, specifically of those who have left their homes and family attachment and have completely taken shelter of you. We have left our homes with a hope that we shall completely devote and dedicate our lives to your service. We are simply begging to be engaged as your servants. We do not wish to ask you to accept us as your wives. Simply accept us as your maidservants. Since you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and like to enjoy the Paragya Ras and are famous as the Transcendental Woman Hunter, we have come to satisfy your transcendental desires. We are also after our own satisfaction, for simply by looking at your smiling face, we have become very lusty. We have come before you decorated with all ornaments and dress, but until you embrace us, all of our dresses and beautiful features remain incomplete. You are the Supreme Person, and if you complete our dressing attempt as the Purusha Bhushana, or the male ornament, then all of our desires and bodily decorations are complete. Dear Krishna, we have simply been captivated by seeing you with tilak and with earrings and by seeing your beautiful face covered with scattered hair and your extraordinary smile. Not only that, but we are also attracted by your arms, which always give assurance to the surrendered souls. And although we are also attracted to your chest, which is always embraced by the goddess of fortune, we do not wish to take her position. We shall simply be satisfied by being your maidservants. If you, however, accuse us of encouraging prostitution, then we can only ask, where is that woman within the three worlds who is not captivated by the beauty and the rhythmic songs vibrated by your transcendental flute? Within these three worlds, there is no distinction between men and women in relation to you, because both men and women belong to the marginal potency or prakriti. No one is actually the enjoyer or the male. Everyone is meant to be enjoyed by you. There is no woman within these three worlds who cannot but deviate from her path of chastity once she is attracted to you. Because your beauty is so sublime that not only men and women, but cows, birds, beasts, and even trees, fruits, and flowers, everyone and everything become enchanted and want to speak of ourselves. It is, however, definitely decided that as Lord Vishnu is always protecting the demigods from the onslaught of demons, so you have also advented in Vrindavan just to give the residents protection from all kinds of distress. Oh, dear friend of the distressed, kindly place your hand on our burning breasts as well as on our heads, because we have surrendered unto you as your eternal maidservants. If you think, however, that your lotus-like palms might be burned to ashes if placed on our burning breasts, let us assure you that your palms will feel pleasure instead of pain as the lotus flower, although very delicate and soft, enjoys the scorching heat of the sun. Upon hearing the anxious plea of the gopis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead began to smile, and, being very kind to the gopis, the Lord, although self-sufficient, began to embrace them and kiss them as they desired. When Krishna, smiling, looked at the faces of the gopis, the beauty of their faces became 100 times enhanced. When he was enjoying them in their midst, he appeared just like the full moon surrounded by millions of shining stars. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrounded by hundreds of gopis and decorated with a flower garland of many colors, began to wander within the Vrindavan forest, sometimes singing to himself and sometimes singing with the gopis. In this way, both the Lord and the gopis reached the cool, sandy bank of the Yamuna, where there were lilies and lotus flowers. In such a transcendental atmosphere, both the gopis and Krishna began to enjoy one another. While they were walking on the bank of the Yamuna, Krishna would sometimes put his arms around the gopis' head, breast, or waist. Pinching one another and joking and looking at one another, they enjoyed. When Krishna touched the bodies of the gopis, their lust to embrace him increased. They all enjoyed these pastimes. Thus, the gopis were blessed with the mercy by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for they enjoyed his company without a tinge of mundane sex life. The gopis, however, soon began to feel very proud, thinking themselves to be the most fortunate women in the universe by being favored by the company of Krishna. Lord Krishna, who is known as Keshava, could immediately understand their pride caused by their great fortune of enjoying him personally. And in order to show them his causeless mercy and to curb their false pride, he immediately disappeared from the scene, exhibiting his opulence of renunciation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always filled with six kinds of opulences, and this is an instance of his opulence of renunciation. This renunciation confirms Krishna's total non-attachment. He is always self-sufficient and is not dependent on anything. This is the platform on which the transcendental pastimes are enacted. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 29th chapter of Krishna, the Rasa Dance introduction. So we'll go on to the next chapter. It's pretty amazing stuff. Text 30. Krishna's hiding from the gopis. This is so amazing. When Krishna suddenly disappeared from the company of the gopis, they began to search for him in every place. After not finding him anywhere, they became afraid and almost mad after him. They were simply thinking of the pastimes of Krishna in great love and affection. Being absorbed in thought, they experienced loss of memory, and with dampened eyes, they began to see the very pastimes of Krishna, his beautiful talks with them, his embracing, kissing, and other activities. Being so attracted to Krishna, they began to imitate his dancing, his walking, and smiling, as if they themselves were Krishna. Due to Krishna's absence, they all became crazy. Each one of them began to tell the others that she was Krishna himself. Soon, they all began to assemble together and chant Krishna's name very loudly. And they moved from one part of the forest to another, searching for him. Actually, Krishna is all-pervasive. He is in the sky, and he is in the forest. He is within the heart, and he is always everywhere. The gopis, therefore, began to question the trees and plants about Krishna. There were various types of big trees and small plants in the forest, and the gopis began to address them. My dear banyan tree, have you seen the son of Maharaj Nanda passing in this way, laughing and playing on his flute? He has stolen our hearts, and he has gone away. If you have seen him, kindly inform us which way he has gone. Dear Ashok tree, dear Naga flower tree, and Champaka flower tree, have you seen the younger brother of Balaram pass this way? He has disappeared because of our pride. The gopis were aware of the reason for Krishna's sudden disappearance. They could understand that when they were enjoying Krishna, they thought themselves to be the most fortunate women within the universe. And since they were feeling proud, Krishna immediately disappeared just to curb their pride. Krishna does not like his devotees to be proud of their service to him. He accepts everyone's service, but he does not like one devotee to be prouder than others. If sometimes there are such feelings, Krishna ends them by changing his attitude toward the devotee. Heavy stuff. The gopis then began to address the Tulsi plants. Dear Tulsi, you are much beloved by Lord Krishna because your leaves are always at his lotus feet. Dear Malati flower, dear Malika flower, dear Jasmine flower, all of you must have been touched by Krishna while he was passing this way after giving us transcendental enjoyment. Have you seen Madhava passing this way? O mango trees, O trees of jackfruit, O pear trees, and asana trees, O blackberries and bale trees, and trees of Kadamba flower, you are all very pious trees to be living on the bank of the Yamuna. Krishna must have passed through this way. Will you kindly let us know which way he has gone? The gopis then looked upon the ground they were traversing and began to address the earth. Dear earthly planet, we do not know how many penances and austerities you have undergone to be now living with the footprints of Lord Krishna upon you. You are very jolly. The hairs on your body are these jubilant trees and plants. Lord Krishna must have been very much pleased with you. Otherwise, how could he have embraced you in the form of Varaha the boar? when you were submerged in water, he delivered you, taking the whole weight of your existence on his tusks. After addressing the innumerable trees and plants, they turned their faces towards the beautiful deer who were looking on them very pleasingly. It appears, they addressed the deer, that Krishna, who is the supreme Narayan himself, must have passed through this way along with his companion Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Otherwise, how is it possible that the aroma of his garland, which is smeared with a red kumkum from the breast of the goddess of fortune, can be perceived in the breeze blowing here? It appears that they must have passed through here and touched your bodies, unless you are feeling so pleasant and are looking toward us with sympathy. Will you kindly, therefore, inform us which way Krishna has gone? Krishna is the well-wisher of Vrindavan. He is as kind to you as to us. Therefore, after leaving us, he must have been present in your company. O fortunate trees, we are thinking of Krishna, the younger brother of Balaram. While passing through here, along with one hand resting on the shoulder of the goddess of fortune, and the other hand whirling a lotus flower, he must have been very pleased to accept your obeisances, and he must have glanced at you with great pleasure. Some of the gopis then began to address their other gopi friends. Dear friends, why don't you question these creepers? We're so jubilantly embracing the big trees as if the trees were their husbands. It appears that the flowers of the creepers must have been touched by the nails of Krishna. Otherwise, how could they feel so jubilant? After searching for Krishna in this way, here and there, when the gopis became fatigued, they began to talk like mad women. They could only satisfy themselves by imitating the different pastimes of Krishna. One of them imitated the demon Putana, and one of them imitated Krishna and sucked her breast. One gopi imitated a hand-driven cart, but another gopi lay down beneath the cart and began to throw up her legs, touching the wheels of the cart, as Krishna did to kill the demon Chakatasura. They imitated child Krishna lying on the ground, and one gopi became the demon Chinavarta, and carried the child Krishna by force into the sky, and one of the gopis began to imitate Krishna while he was attempting to walk, ringing his ankle bells. Two gopis imitated Krishna and Balaram, and many others imitated their coward boyfriends. One gopi assumed the form of Bakasura, and another forced her to fall down as the demon Bakasura did when he was killed. Similarly, another gopi defeated Vatsasura. Just as Krishna used to call his cows by their different names, so the gopis imitated him, calling the cows by their respective names. One of the gopis began to play on a flute, and another praised her the way Krishna's boyfriends praised him while he played on the flute. One of the gopis took another gopi on her shoulders, just as Krishna used to take his boyfriends. Absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the gopi who was carrying her friend began to boast that she was Krishna herself. All of you, just see my movement. One of the gopis raised her hand with her covering garments and said, "Now don't be afraid of the torrents of rain and severe hurricanes. I'll save you." In this way, she imitated the lifting of Govardhan Hill. One gopi forcibly put her feet on the head of another gopi and said, "You rascal Kaliya, I shall punish you severely. You must leave this place. I have descended on this earth to punish all kinds of miscreants." Another gopi told her friends, "Just see, the flames of the forest fire are coming to devour us. Please close your eyes, and I shall immediately save you from this imminent danger." In this way, the gopis were madly feeling the absence of Krishna. They inquired for him from the trees and plants. In some places, they found the imprints of the marks of the sole of his feet, namely the flag, lotus flower, trident, thunderbolt, etc. After seeing those footprints, they exclaimed, "Oh, here is the impression of the marks in the soul of Krishna. All the marks, such as the flag, lotus flower, trident, thunderbolt, are distinctly visible here." They began to follow the footprints, and shortly they saw another set of footprints besides them. And immediately they became very sorry. "Dear friends, just see, whose are these other footprints?" They are beside the footprints of the son of Maharaj Nanda. It is certainly Krishna passing through, resting his hand on some other gopi, exactly as an elephant goes side by side with his beloved mate. We must therefore understand that this particular gopi served Krishna with greater affectionate love than ourselves. Because of this, although he has left us, he could not leave her company. He has taken her along with him. dear friends, just imagine how the dust of this place is transcendentally glorious. The dust of the lotus feet of Krishna is worshipped even by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. But at the same time, we are sorry to see that this particular gopi has gone along with Krishna, for she is sharing the nectar of Krishna's kisses and leaving us aside. Oh, friends, just see, at this particular spot, we do not see the footprints of that gopi. It appears that because there were some pinpricks from the dried grass, Krishna took Radharani on his shoulder. Oh, she is so dear to him. Krishna must have picked up some flowers in the spot to satisfy Radharani, because here, where he stood erect to get the flowers from the high branches of the tree, we find only half the impression of his feet. Dear friends, just see how Krishna must have sat down here with Radharani and tried to set flowers in her hair. You can be certain that both of them sat down together here. Krishna is self-sufficient. He has nothing to enjoy from any other source. Yet just to satisfy his devotee, he has treated Radharani exactly as a lusty boy treats his girlfriend. Krishna is so kind that he always tolerates the disturbances created by his girlfriends. And also, we should understand that the name Radharani is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's just mentioned, they say she or she who worships him. But this is Prabhupada's Krishna book, and he's actually the intimation is it's Radharani, obviously. In this way, all the gopis began to point out the faults of the particular gopi who had been taken alone by Krishna. They began to say that the chief gopi, Radharani, who was taken alone by Krishna, must be very proud of her position, thinking herself the greatest of the gopis. Yet how could Krishna take her away, leaving all of us aside, unless she be extraordinarily qualified and beautiful? She must have taken Krishna in the deep forest and told him, "My dear Krishna, I am now very tired. I cannot go any farther. Please carry me wherever you like." When Krishna was spoken to in this way, he might have told Radharani, "All right, better get on my shoulder." But immediately Krishna must have disappeared, and now Radharani must be lamenting for him. "My dear lover, my dearest, you are so fine and powerful. Where have you gone? I am nothing but your most obedient maidservant. I am very much aggrieved. Please come and be with me again." Krishna, however, is not coming to her. He must be watching her from a distant place and enjoying her sorrow. All the gopis then went further and further into the forest, searching out Krishna. But when they learned that actually Radharani was left alone by Krishna, they became very sorry. This is the test of Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, they were a little envious that Krishna had taken Radharani alone, leaving aside all the other gopis. But as soon as they knew that Krishna had also left Radharani, and that she was alone lamenting for him, they became more sympathetic to it. That's like misery loves company. Of course, what we have in this world is an inverted reflection of that. The gopis found Radharani and heard everything from her about how she misbehaved with Krishna and how she was proud and was insulted for her pride. After hearing all this, they became actually very sympathetic. Then all the gopis, including Radharani, began to proceed further into the forest until they could no longer see the moonlight. When they saw that it was getting gradually darker, they stopped. Their mind and intelligence became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. They all imitated the activities of Krishna and his speeches. Due to their heart and soul being completely given to Krishna, they began to chant his glories, completely forgetting their family interests. In this way, all the gopis assembled together on the bank of Yamuna, and expecting that Krishna must return to them, they simply engaged in the chanting of the glories of Sri Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that's all we'll read today. Nice, isn't it? It's really, in fact, it's blissful to read this. It's enough to put you in the spiritual world.